Ghoulish greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of the lovely Bobby Mackey, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't bear the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift. Whenever you listen, and wherever you are listening from Iceland to Thailand, from Crystal Lake to Lake Arrowhead, from tiny village to big city, and you guessed it, every single damn place in between, it is absolutely appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
Panama City, Panama, Cape Elizabeth, Maine, Leawood, Kansas, Sundbyberg, Sweden, Grimsby, Canada, and Jacksonville, North Carolina. Definitely need your passport for this one, you guys. So I was recently in Wyoming, and I got to visit with my dear, sweet friend, Kara, who is battling terminal cystic lung disease. And you've heard from her in the past with her very own episode. And then, of course, she was just on the previous episode, the Halloween episode. And, of course, the city shout-out intro and outro for the past several episodes. She is one of the beautiful voices of Paranormal Prowlers Podcast. So we had a great, great time together. You know, it's so heartbreaking to see her constantly struggling with breathing and just doing everyday things and things that most of us really do take for granted. I'm one of them. How she has survived this long, seeing what she goes through every second of the day in this horrific battle she's fighting, is truly beyond me. She is an absolute badass warrior and one of the strongest people I know, really, truly. So at one point while there, her twin sister, my friend Kristen, both of us, we had a scare. So Kara was not waking up at all. Her breathing was labored, and it's like she was stuck in a nightmare with Freddy Krueger. We tried awakening her with no success. You know when you sleep and if someone touches you, whether it be your spouse, parent, sibling, whoever it is, you most likely respond, right? Either that tickles and you kind of slap it away, or you wake up. Unless you're one of those crazy sleepers where nothing can get you up and moving. Well, we would massage her arms, her legs, hold her hand, talk to her, stroke her hair. No response whatsoever. And finally, it was well past noon and still nothing. And we were literally saying our goodbyes to her. It was that scary. And she finally did get woken up from what I thought was going to be a coma, but must have just been an extremely deep, deep slumber. And later that day, she had confided in her sister that she had not really wanted to wake up, that she wanted to go peacefully in her sleep, but she did not want to die when I was there since I traveled all that way from Colorado. So I actually had to have that hard talk with her and tell her that it's okay to let go, not to prolong her pain and suffering for me, as I would not want my sister from another mister to have to suffer a moment longer than absolutely necessary. So holding her hand and talking to her about the fact that she fought so hard for so long and not to hold on for anyone, as she feels she will disappoint people. And that can't be further from the truth. Anyone who knows her or anything about this dreadful, disgusting disease that is slowly killing her, mind you, knows that it's not considered giving up. It's far from it. She's a soldier. She's a warrior. Fighting this thing head on. Something she cannot win, unfortunately. But you better fucking believe that my girl, Kara, is not going down easy. But the body can only take so much, obviously. And this girl is just so amazing that when asked if she wanted to be put on the list for a lung transplant, She said no after finding out that it may possibly, perhaps, prolong her life for up to 5 years. She said, hell no, someone else deserves that lung, giving them much longer of a lifespan to enjoy than it would give to her. Now that's amazing, because if you were given that option and if you were in this situation, what would you do? Many would probably take that lung for the 5 years, and that's okay. That is okay. I can't say honestly what I would do if I were in that situation, but Kara, oh, Kara. So her fundraiser is still up and going strong. You can find her through Facebook or on my Facebook page. She makes these really kick-ass, awesome keychains. Some are spooky themed, some have animals, some have little Jeeps, some are ghostly looking. And the money from those items goes to her fundraiser, ultimately for her cremation. That link for donating without buying something is on my episode description, has been for quite a while now. You can always find it there. But if you're interested in buying any of her merchandise, and they're going quick, email me at paraprowl@gmail.com or find her on her Facebook page, Kara McCoy. So getting to the topic of this episode, when I was in Wyoming visiting Kara and Kristen earlier this summer, Kara had taken me to a location that is forever a part of Wyoming's dark history, a place called Heart Mountain Relocation Center, an internment camp during World War II, where after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, many, if not all, Japanese-born Americans were forced out of their homes and scattered all throughout the United States into these camps, more like prisons, many families forever separated. Truly heartbreaking stuff. Heart Mountain was one of a handful of these internment camps scattered throughout the United States. Executive Order 9066 was signed by FDR, which basically allowed the military to remove these specific individuals from their homes, many who were born here in the United States or who had come here legally decades earlier. Some of these folks would not live to see the end of the war, unfortunately. Others, they were separated, sometimes never seeing each other again. And all endured heartbreak and went through things nobody should have to experience. Now, some of the other camps include Manzanar, the first of its kind to open in the United States, having 10,046 people, and Tule Lake, having 18,789 people. Now, both of these camps were located in California. Now, Arizona had two as well, Poston with 17,814, and Gila River having 13,348 people. Arkansas had two, known as Rowhere, with 8,475, and Jerome having a similar number of people, 8,497. Colorado, well, they had Granada with 7,318. And even though this number is extremely high, as each number is a living and breathing person, believe it or not, Colorado's number is the lowest when it comes to these camps in the United States. Utah had Topaz with 8,130 people. Idaho had Minidoka with 9,397 people. And last but certainly not least, my friends, is Wyoming's own Heart Mountain, named for the mountains surrounding the area. And you know, names can be deceiving. Heart Mountain sounds happy, positive, romantic even, right? But there was nothing happy, positive, or romantic about this internment camp. They had, at their peak, 10,767 people. Other accounts have this number much higher, closer to 14,000. I don't take those for what they say, though, because actual signs at this location say that the numbers are more accurate of 10,767. So the location where Heart Mountain Relocation Camp It was deemed a very convenient location and was specifically chosen due to its being a remote area. But a stone's throw away from the railroad, used for transporting people, or better term, possibly inmates, food, supplies, and, you know, water was nearby as well. Very convenient for sure. And besides water, other conveniences and must-haves. Construction takes place in June of 1942 and is completed in August of that very same year. And you better believe it wasn't too long once completed that folks were being transferred from their homes and over to their new temporary home. Their futures looked dark and unknown, filled with uncertainty. I quote, only in your state. It quickly became the fourth largest internment camp in the United States. The property spanned 46,000 acres of flat land and grass. 740 of those acres were used for housing, barracks, and the remainder was mostly used for farming. Unquote. Heart Mountain shuts down on November 10th of 1945, 10 weeks, or to be more specific, 69 days after the Second World War officially ended, that being, of course, on September the 2nd. Plaques at the location share bone-chilling history. One reads, Heart Mountain Relocation Center Memorial Park, 1942 to 1945. This memorial is dedicated to those people interred here during World War II, to their sons and daughters who served our country, and to those who gave their lives in that service. 1977 erected, through interests of these Heart Mountain organizations, the Extension Club, the Homesteaders Association, and the Irrigation District, the Powell Bicentennial Commission, the Park County Commissioners, and the Historical Societies of Park County and Wyoming. Another sign reads this, Heart Mountain Relocation Center has been designated a National Historic Landmark. Between 1942 and 1945, guard towers and barbed wire fences on this site confined a community of nearly 11,000 forcibly uprooted people of Japanese ancestry, most of whom were American citizens. All were victims of racial prejudice, wartime hysteria, and failed political leadership. This site possesses nation significance in illustrating the history of the United States of America. 2006 National Park Service United States Department of the Interior. And one final plaque, which shares probably the most information about this location, is this. History. After the bombing of Pearl Harbor on December 7th of 1941, many parts of the West Coast were declared military defense zones. The government ordered the removal of all persons of Japanese ancestry, and the War Relocation Authority was established in March 1942 to house them in inland camps. The Heart Mountain Relocation Center was one of 10 temporary camps constructed to confine over 110,000 men, women, and children forced to leave their homes in California, Oregon, Washington, and part of Arizona. It was the only camp located in Wyoming. Construction on the center began in June 1942, and the first internees arrived in August of that year. As the peak of its population, the Heart Mountain Center, which covered over 740 acres, contained nearly 11,000 people housed in 450 barracks. Although surrounded by barbed wire and armed guards, the internees kept the camp functioning as a small city with its own public works, grade schools, a high school, hospital, and newspaper. At the time, it was the third largest city in Wyoming. The camp was closed in November of 1945. The buildings were moved and the land made arable by irrigation ditches completed by the internees was opened for homesteading. A portion of the Heart Mountain Center was listed on the National Register of Historic Places on December 19th of 1985. The area listed includes the immediate vicinity of this honor roll and the structures located to the east. Honor roll. This monument was erected by the internees at the Heart Mountain Relocation Center in August 1944 to honor those from the camp who served the United States Armed Forces in World War II. The photographs to the right and below show the honor roll as it was in 1944. Although the elements have erased the names of those listed, the structure still remains as it was originally. In 1978, the honor roll was preserved as a memorial not only to those Japanese Americans who served in the military, but also to recognize the sacrifices of those who were interned here throughout the war. In 1985, a plaque was erected honoring those people from Heart Mountain who gave their lives in World War II. As mentioned at the beginning of the episode, earlier this year, Kara and I went to this location, and we had just spent the day in Cody and were traveling back to her home, and this was on the way back, so she knew she had to take me here to show it to me. And let me just say that it was eerie. We went there in broad daylight, but I felt as if I was at an unknown location at nighttime. You know when you feel like unseen forces are surrounding you? Unknown and unseen presences sharing space with you? Hidden eyes just watching your every single move? I felt it all right there. It was very eerie. And after reading my grandpa's own words, what would happen at some of these encampments, these relocation centers, families being separated, some of the women being attacked, and what have you, to say I felt the heartbreak, the death, depression, and the despair there is a total understatement. I felt it all. I was standoffish. We didn't spend too much time there at all, as we were both pooped out from the day and we still had dinner plans to do. But the short time I was there, I just felt so much. And it reminded me of kind of like walking into a prison. And for several thousand, that's exactly what it was for them. Heart Mountain was a prison, but with one huge difference. I had my freedom. I was able to walk out of there and leave that place. Where they were unfortunate. They were stuck. They were surrounded by barbed wire and guards. No way they were getting out of there. So I want to read a letter written by a concerned Japanese American citizen, written to the local board located in Los Angeles County. And I'm sure that there were a lot of letters like this. And it reads this: "Sirs, I believe this draft law was not intended for me. I was evacuated without due process of law. I am concentrated without due process of law. I was deported from my home state without due process of law. I am detained within barbed wire fences by force of military threat without the due process of law. I exist within this militarily guarded enclosure as a citizen without a country without due process of law. The whole transaction affecting me is based upon unconstitutional interpretations without due process of law. I reserve for myself the right of every true and loyal American, the right of protest and challenge. As such, my loyalty and allegiance is due to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the various approved and tried instruments of our government, above propaganda, discrimination, selfish interests, hastily enacted laws, under pressure, and other un-American ways. I cite Judge Denman, where claims of oppression arising from congressional legislation are not regarded as making the legislation invalid, the claimant should look to Congress for his remedy. Then too, Abraham Lincoln said, if by the mere force of numbers, a majority should deprive a minority of any constitutional right, it might in a moral point of view justify a revolution. certainly would if such right were a vital one. Thereby, I believe my first duty as a true and loyal citizen of this nation is the correction of the evils against the Constitution and democratic practices through denial to us of justice, freedom, and due process of law before recognizing your right of jurisdiction over me. It is vital as a constitutional issue, otherwise I would be a partner in a traitorous act. I ask your board thereby to withhold further acts against me until after such time as my citizenship status and rights are clarified by a judicial pronouncement and congressional act. Sincerely. There were a variety of internees that called Heart Mountain home during the Second World War, such as painters, poets, veterans, actors, graphic designers, farmers, animators, doctors, photographers, teachers, newspaper publishers, playwrights, and oh so many others. Just to name a couple, Rokuro Kuwahara, he was a Japanese-born American and was an animator for Walt Disney. He was also a director for the Deputy Dog series, helping countless children smile watching his creations. Otto Yamahaka was an actor who appeared in several movies from 1930 to 1940, and a handful of them were unfortunately uncredited roles, but he was in many movies and considered a successful actor. And then we have Mary Matsuda Grenwald. She was an author, or would become an author. She was just a child when she was at Heart Mountain. And she wrote a bone-chilling book about her time during the war, A Time of Uncertainty. And the title alone is just so gut-wrenching. And it's titled, Looking Like the Enemy, My Story of Imprisonment in Japanese-American Internment Camps. Now, she said that this was a thing that people did not talk about, like years later. When she had her own children, she wouldn't talk about it. And then one day, her daughter had to do a report on it and couldn't find any information about it whatsoever. And so I'm sure that's maybe changed now, but reading this book is very interesting. It gives you a firsthand account of what just one family dealt with. And at the bottom of the book, it says family number 19788. Like they're just like some sort of like product number cast away off in the shelves. Very sad, very chilling to me. And I want to read some quotes from this book, and I recommend reading the entirety of this book sometime. And again, it's titled Looking Like the Enemy, My Story of Imprisonment in Japanese-American Internment Camps. Quote, during World War II, Japanese-Americans endured the wholesale violation of our civil rights and human rights as residents and civilians of the United States. Many would lose their homes, livelihoods, and dreams and be left with pain, confusion, and shame. This legacy has shadowed my entire adult life. Unquote. Now, in chapter one, titled An Island in Darkness, I read this, quote, nothing could protect us from the events following December 7th, 1941, the day Pearl Harbor was bombed. So she discusses that morning, how it started off just like a regular day. For years, her and her brother would walk to their hometown church, and it was English speaking. Her mom and dad did not go to that because, you know, it wasn't Japanese speaking, and that's fine. But the kids did go, and they would go back and forth. And so they arrive home that day on December 7th, and it was a home that would soon cease to exist. A home that soon would be chaotic. Sadness was in the air, and that did not fall upon deaf ears. These two children were young, but they were not stupid. They knew exactly the moment they walked into that door that something was wrong. I quote again, I put my things down, suddenly frightened. I had never seen this look on my father's face. I wondered, why won't they look at us? After a long silence, Papa-san looked up and answered quietly in Japanese, Mr. Yabu called. Japanese airplanes bombed Pearl Harbor in Hawaii early this morning. She shares that her brother hops over to where the radio is and turns it on, and panic is pouring through the speaker. And no, this is not a rumor. It's not a story. It's not a nightmare. This really happened. And so I skip ahead just a tiny bit. Little did we know that Sunday afternoon how much our lives would change, but Papa-san knew enough to be afraid. He realized what could happen if public opinion turned against him. Some 40 years earlier, shortly after his arrival in the United States, my father and several other Japanese men were working in the coal mines in the Alaskan Klondike. One day, a white friend sought him out and said, "Harry, there's a bunch of guys who don't like you fellows, and they are planning to raid your camp tonight. You'd better get out of town right away." The Japanese men scrambled to gather their things, hurriedly broke up camp, left their jobs, and escaped before the vigilantes arrived. At the time, Papa-san told us about this incident. He also described learning firsthand about prejudice and how important it was to develop good relationships with everyone wherever he went. Now, all those good relationships with neighbors and business associates would be tested, unquote. Now, it's the following morning, and she finds herself in school, and it's like she's on foreign soil. Quote, "The following morning, I reluctantly went to school at Vashon High. I felt guilty, ashamed, that the Japanese government, to which my parents tied me, had done this terrible deed to our United States. As I went through the halls from one class to another, every time anyone looked at me, I imagined hatred in their eyes. I assumed that everyone was prejudiced and didn't want to have anything to do with me. In one of my classes, I began to cry, as much from confusion and frustration. Crying seemed to be the only thing I could do. I thought, I am an American, yet I don't look like one. I am Japanese, but ashamed that I am." Unquote. Then, of course, the dreaded day, evacuation day. Saying goodbye to a structure that was a house that the family together turned into a home. Creating memories, dealt with bad times, but had good times too. Great times. As every family, they have ups and downs. Quote, May 16th, 1942, evacuation day came early after a fitful night's sleep. When I awoke, I lay still for a moment and took a deep breath, thinking, this is the day. I could hear Mama-san stirring downstairs and smelled the coffee. Reluctantly, I got out of my comfortable bed, smoothed the covers, and puffed up the pillow. After I got dressed, I pulled up the shade and looked outdoors. The sky was gray, a good reflection of how life appeared to me that morning. Across the field, ripening berries peered out here and there from rows of green and lush strawberry plants. "Why do we have to go?" I asked no one. "Where are we going? When will we come back?" My vision blurred. Slowly, I turned from the window and went downstairs. And the last part I want to read is about actually being at one of these locations. And she and her family had been to more than just Heart Mountain. So this might not be particularly talking about Heart Mountain, but you get the idea of what's taking place here. Everywhere I looked, there were hundreds of people with brown eyes, black hair, and yellow skin, just like mine. On Vashon Island, where we had come from, the majority of the people were white, with a generous sprinkling of Japanese, Chinese, and a few Filipino men. I had never lived in a place where everyone looked the same. People already living at the camp briefly glanced at us new arrivals with curiosity, disinterest, or sympathy. Then they quickly dropped their eyes and moved on about their business. Internees who had arrived much earlier escorted us, helping us find the space we would try to make into a home. All the barracks were identical, obviously constructed in a hurry. They had been framed up, the outside sheeted with crude wooden siding, then covered with tar paper. No additional siding was put over the tar paper. The inside was plain wood sheeting. There was no plaster, paint, or insulation, just a blank, drab tan room with four walls, a peaked roof, and an off-white concrete floor. A cow had obviously walked across the concrete floor before it had hardened, leaving her hoof prints. Our living space was a bare 20 foot by 24 foot room in the middle of a 120 foot long barrack. Ours had 6 army cots and a pile of blankets left in the middle of the room. Nothing else. No other furniture, no running water, no storage space, and nothing to use to prepare a meal. Only a single bare light bulb, screwed into a ceramic socket on the end of a long electrical cord, hung from the ceiling. We would later learn there were 5 different sized living spaces in the building, all of them small and bare. An older couple who had arrived just ahead of us was to share the same space with us. We were strangers to each other. Upon meeting, we looked at each other and silently nodded in acknowledgement. That nod between my parents and the older couple spoke volumes. The simple nonverbal communication said how much we would see and not see, hear and not hear, smell and not smell, as we lived 4 feet from each other. The nod meant, "We will honor your privacy." Partitions between the living spaces were only about 7 feet high, leaving a 4-foot triangular opening from the top of the partitions to the peak of the ceiling. This opening extended the full length of the barrack. While we could not see our neighbors, we could hear everything that went on anywhere in the barrack, regardless of the time of day or night. Unquote. It's very heartbreaking, obviously, what all these people had to go through. This location has long since been believed to be haunted. And while I have not investigated here myself, my dear friend, my sister from another Mr. and Mrs., Kara McCoy, has. And her incredible team WASP, meaning Wyoming Area Spirit Posse, have definitely gathered enough evidence here to cast no doubt that this location is indeed haunted. And I, like I said earlier, felt stuff here, and only wished I could have had at least been armed with my digital recorder. Oh, the EVPs that could have been captured. Many have died here due to the harsh and unforgiving Wyoming weather elements, illnesses, and they are believed to remain here haunting this land, forever stuck here. Now, if that's not heartbreaking, I don't know what is. Death, your soul was supposed to be released, right? And if you're stuck in this prison still, well, what the hell? So people visiting the area have experienced many things, such as feeling cold spots, hearing disembodied footsteps and voices, oftentimes whispering in Japanese, when no one else is near the area. Photographic evidence, you better believe, has also been captured here. And paranormal investigators have had very much success while capturing electronic voice phenomena in both English and Japanese. According to Hauntpedia.com, the apparition of an elderly woman has been seen roaming the area. Wearing a beautiful traditional Japanese dress, usually near the water tower, vanishing into thin air when people attempt to approach her. From the same article, I quote, "One tells of a young boy who fell ill and died in the camp. His cries are still heard on quiet nights, especially in the area where the children's barracks once stood." Another account comes from a former volunteer who saw a shadowy figure standing outside the mess hall long after dark, watching silently before vanishing into thin air. Locals whisper about a man who hung himself in one of the latrines. Some say his ghost paces nearby with a rope still around his neck. Unquote. It's very heartbreaking if any of those stories have any ring of truth to them. I know many did die here due to illnesses, and surely that must have included children. And when it comes to suicides, that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if there were some folks who, unknown what their futures looked like, just called it quits, not knowing if this was going to be their lives forever. Desperate times. Very sad. First a war taking place and now confined to what must have felt like a prison. Only in Your State shares more spooky information. Quote, "Employees current and past have reported many bizarre and frightening experiences. They've heard coughing and voices whispering when nobody else is near. Nobody that they can see, anyway. Visitors have reported very similar experiences. There are numerous tales of people being watched, hearing phantom music playing from empty barracks, and even a friendly host that leads guests around on tours, only to disappear shortly after the tour begins. Other reports claim that there are shadow people in the halls and barracks when the sun goes down. People see something move out of the corner of their eye, but when they look, there's nothing there. During my research, I did see someone comment on one of the pages, leaving a note saying that they have no compassion for Japanese people, how this individual had a family member contained during the war, and they were treated very badly by the Japanese, and saying that they are the most hateful people in the world, basically saying that they deserved what they got and how they were treated. And I'm sorry, but this kind of stuff just pisses me off. This is plain, straight-up ignorance. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I was bullied for years at a tiny shithole in the wall school in New Mexico. And believe you me, I cringe when I am anywhere near that location. My bullies, they were all Mexican, Spanish, Hispanic. And did I grow up hating those types of people? Fuck no. Believe me, I grew up despising the certain people. Themselves, sure, as individuals, but as a race or nationality? No, never, never for a moment did it cross my mind to be that ignorant. Many of my closest friends are Spanish, in some shape or form. I have family, through marriage, that are Spanish, and I love them dearly. I don't get me started about their food. I am a chili-holic all the way, no doubt. I always kid around saying that I'm a horrible Italian because if you put a bowl of spaghetti in front of me and you put a bowl of chile, guess which one I'm going to? It ain't the spaghetti, honey. But yeah, so it's like people like that just really piss me off. And for the person who wrote that, if I could say, I'm sorry that your loved one went through what they did. I can't even begin to imagine the horrors that they experienced or the heartbreak that they endured. And yeah, for the specific individuals who did that to your beloved family member, screw them. Horrible people like my bullies. But as individuals, not as a race or nationality. That's all I gotta say. That's my two cents. But to hate an entire nationality is just beyond absurd. I have a family member who married a Japanese woman, and this family member has since passed away, but she is still very much a part of the family and very, very loved and respected. One of the sweetest women, one of the sweetest people that I know. So I do have a YouTube video, I don't, but WASP has a video that they have released about Heart Mountain quite a while back. And with permission from beautiful Kara and Tammy, I am going to share bits and pieces of that audio. So you'll be hearing these two beautiful gals talking about the location and about some of the evidence that they have captured while there. And I will also put the link so you can watch the video in you know, its full form. And so since I'm not doing the whole video on here, just bits and pieces between parts, I'm just going to do a little pause just so you know, okay, so she's jumping ahead and now it's a different part of the video. But again, I do totally recommend that you guys watch the video with your own eyes because it takes you through Heart Mountain Relocation Center, and it is just mind-boggling and heartbreaking, and it's neat to actually, instead of just 100% hearing about it, to actually watch it too. And again, you want to watch the whole thing because it's just incredible. They did a great job with the video.
Did you hear that? It talked right over me.
Oh my God.
No way. Check that out.
They were forced to leave their homes, their businesses, their animals, everything that they had, they were forced to leave behind. And unfortunately, none of those things could be saved. They had a high school here. They had a gymnasium, had a hospital, a fire department. They actually had a petting zoo, believe it or not, which consisted of animals like bats and rattlesnakes and...
Rattlesnakes.
Mice.
Crazy.
The barracks in which they were housed, tiny confinement area. The rooms can hold up to 6 people. They were forced to share bathrooms and showers, and, you know, they had a mess hall where they all had to eat together. They were supposed to have these really good meals. There was a menu planned, and they were supposed to have, you know, these gourmet meals that were prepared for them. And unfortunately, most of the time it was rice and stewed tomatoes.
Hey, Tammy, right over here, around this corner, is where we caught that old lady talking to us. How about we put the REM pod down, see if she's still here to talk. Okay, so the REM pod is set right next to this building. So earlier when we were walking, and it was after Tammy's live feed went dead, her phone just died out of the blue. It was crazy. When we were walking through here, I was recording on my camera, on my phone, and a lady talked over me. All right, so the live feed died.
My phone just went dead.
Just unexplainable.
And when I got here, it was at 75% power.
Yeah.
During live feed. I can't.
Yeah, that's never happened. We'll get it figured out. We're not that far from Cody, so...
It's coming back on.
What the hell? I don't understand. I am, like, weirded out a little bit.
It just went dead. As soon as I got to that fire hydrant, it just completely shut off.
Huh. I wonder if we're gonna... Did you hear that? It talked right over me. Loud and clear, like a little old lady.
A female voice.
I wonder if we're gonna... I wonder if we're gonna...
I thought that was you talking.
I was talking. It talked over me. That was messed up. Are you for real right now? That was weird. She, like, straight up talked over me.
I heard it. I thought it was you.
No!
I had two voices. It was weird.
I was like, wait a minute. What?
It says the hospital complex completed in 1942 relied on the boiler house to provide steam heat during cold Wyoming weather. An essential feature of the boiler house, the smokestack stood as the most prominent structure at the center, as it does now. Of the 10 Japanese-American relocation centers constructed in the U.S. during World War II, Heart Mountain retains the most intact hospital complex, of which the smokestack is the most distinguishing feature.
So again, this is just the tiniest bit about this video. It's about 16 minutes long. So not too terribly long to just sit down and relax and watch it. And it makes you grateful that that's a place that you did not have to call home yourself. That's for sure. Be sure to click that subscribe button for my gals with WASP. Again, that's Wyoming Area Spirit Posse. Badass chicks. They also have a lot of fun doing these videos. So there's some laughter going on and they just have a great time together, for sure. And just an FYI, the pictures that you will see for the cover picture are pictures that I took myself earlier this summer.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single damn one yet? Oh, there's no need to lose any sleep over it, really. You could binge listen to your heart's right and delight this very moment by hitting up any of those terrific podcast platforms, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Deezer, Player FM, Downcast, Castbox, Podcast Republic. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and I will
see you next week.